We're about a little bit more than two weeks away from the Phoenix Suns making their return to the NBA playoffs. What seed will they be? We have yet to find out. Their opponent, we've yet to find out. Here to talk about Suns and NBA with us, Amin Alhassan joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Amin, how are you today?
How's it going, guys? Hope all is well.
Hope it is well. One of the things that we're experiencing, though, with a basketball team in town that has, real expectations on them, playoff hopes, championship aspirations, is that the reaction to things is a little bit more harsh. What do you take, if anything, from the Suns getting blown out in Atlanta the other night?
Well, I mean, it happens. No one's perfect. And if you look at, again, their last 25 games, if the lowest point was a blowout in Atlanta on the end of a road trip on a back-to-back, you take that. Mm-hmm. That's not the end of the world.
When you look at the Suns, though, I think there's a fundamental question. Were they just tired at the second half of a back-to-back, or are they tired, period, because of a whole host of reasons? They do not load manage. The schedule's been very condensed and very difficult. The body clocks might tell them that it should be off-season time or playoff time. What do you make of that? How do you know the difference with the basketball time this team this time of year?
Well, I think, first of all, their recent performance is a good indicator, right? If they're having a lot of these kind of slip-ups, so-called slip-ups, then you might get a little bit more concerned, right? They had the back-to-back losses at the end of April against Boston and the Nets, but that Boston game was the back end of a back-to-back after mm-hmm. they played in Philly the night before, and Philly's a really good team, right? And the Nets, obviously, that was a game where I believe Durant came back and was just scintillating. Mm-hmm. So the one loss, I would say, in the last, May, April, and March, that you really tilt your head and say, what happened here, was the Spurs loss at home.
Mm-hmm.
That blowout where they didn't even send everybody. They got fined. That's how many people they left in San Antonio. The Spurs got fined for that. And that same night, the Jazz coughed up and lost. And instead of coming out and snatching that number one seed on that night, the Suns have one of their worst losses of the season. That's the only loss I look at in the last couple of months that makes me kind of tilt my head. But ultimately, I think this team has played well. You're right that, minutes might be an issue, but I don't think they're an issue right now. I think that'll rear its head a little bit later once they get into the swing of the playoffs.
Yeah, you kind of led me where I was going with the next question, because there's a lot of people that are asking of Monty Williams, why are you not following suit with what's going on in the NBA, maybe resting your players down the stretch? And when you have a veteran leader like Chris Paul come out and say very publicly, if I'm healthy, I'm playing, it might make it harder to do. But do you think Monty Williams is erring in his strategy right now?
I think this is the way I've described load management to people who are, let's just say, resistant to it. Imagine we all lived in a building back in the 1800s, and we lived on the seventh floor of this building. For us to get to our apartments on the seventh floor, how would we get there? You got to take the stairs, right?
Mm-hmm.
No other way. And then one day they invent an elevator. And now our building has an elevator in it, but you're still insistent on taking the stairs. You can do that, and everyone's going to say, wow, he's really about his fitness and all that stuff, but there's going to come a time where we're going to compete in something, and I'm going to be fresh and full of energy because I've been taking the elevator, and you're going to be tired and sluggish because you've been taking the stairs. While it is admirable that you took the stairs this whole time, at some point, it's kind of ridiculous. You are putting yourself willingly at a disadvantage against everybody else because this isn't golf. You're not competing against yourself. You're competing against people who are trying to get this done against you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, as a team, and I believe you have to look no further than the Houston Rockets and James Harden about this.
Oh, that's
James
funny.
Harden was routinely 38, 39 minutes, 81, 82 games played. I don't think he dipped below 73 in any season in Houston that wasn't shortened by COVID. Ask him how he felt by the time he got to the playoffs.
Yeah.
See how he looked against San Antonio, against Golden State, against whatever team bounced the Houston Rockets out of the playoffs. He always looked tired. And you know what people said? They didn't say, he's tired because he played all those minutes and all those games while everybody else is resting. They said, he's not clutch. He doesn't that. Like, they made it a character assassination on him. But the reality was, he's playing the game with a different set of rules than everybody else was. And so, you know, if you're the son and you're going through what you're going through and Monty has a strategy, you have to ask yourself, that's great for now, but when we get to the real thing, is that going to help us?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's taking the elevator. I love that analogy. Yeah. And that's kind of, that to me is sort of why that loss in Atlanta and the game before it in Cleveland bothered me so much, because that Cleveland game went to overtime and it shouldn't. And there have been some examples of unnecessary minutes logged from this team. They haven't affected the oldest player yet. But I think you're right. That's the fear, that something that seems so noble and virtuous in real time is just not smart because your opponents are taking the elevator.
Yeah, and I think that's the main thing to remember also when you talk about load management. It's not instant. It's like, I sat out tonight, so tomorrow I'll be great. It's a cumulative effect, right? Mm-hmm. The worry is over time. Is this having a deleterious effect to us as a team and then individual players? And so, you know, I've had conversations with kind of people in the injury expert field about Harden's hamstring issue that he's been dealing with the Nets this year. And I said, how much of that can we attribute to the odometer's running high on this guy? He's played a lot of minutes, a lot of games over the last 8 years. And we just expect it to have no impact? I don't know if I agree.
We're talking basketball with Amin El-Hassan, who joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Interesting lead-in when we're talking about minutes played, especially at this point of the season, on a night where the New York Knicks are in town to take on the Suns, because that's something Tom Thibodeau has dealt with. Criticism of Julius Randle, especially playing a ton of minutes. But, you know, big picture with the Knicks, they're an intriguing team. Right in the middle of the Eastern Conference pecking order, what kind of chances do you give the Knicks in the postseason? I mean,
it depends. If they play Atlanta in the first round, as it's currently slated to be, where Atlanta's a five and they're the four, then I think they've got a really good chance to win that first round series. If they've got to play anybody else, the Celtics, the Heat, any one of those teams that's been there, done that, I think they might have issues. And the reason why is, it's something, by the way, that the Suns are going to have to worry about as well. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of, this is my first time at the rodeo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Derrick Rose has been in the playoffs and Taj Gibson to the playoffs in the same way that Chris Paul and Dick Crowder have been in the playoffs a bunch of times. But the vast majority of your lineup and your production and your main players in both New York and Phoenix, people have never done this before. And so no matter how well they play, there is an element of, like, first time at the rodeo, and we're figuring out the rodeo ain't exactly what I thought it was. And when you have a talent gap, meaning we're way better as players than our opponent, then that helps. It helps you overcome that experience gap. But the smaller the talent gap, the bigger the experience comes in handy. So by way of example, the Suns in the first round might end up playing Memphis. Well, in that case, it's like, you're so much better than them. Or even San Antonio. You're so much better than San Antonio, and they may have some experience, but they're just not good enough to beat you. In four times out of seven games. The problem with the Knicks is there's no team that they're that much better than talent-wise.
Mm-hmm.
That they can say, it don't matter how experienced you guys are, we're going to run you off the floor. So because that talent gap is so small for the Knicks, the experience thing is probably going to work against them, which is why it's so important for them to play in Atlanta in the first round, because you know they're just as green at this as we are.
All right, what do we have to do to get Chris Paul the MVP trophy? You know what? Can you twist any arms, Amin?
Yeah, you got a. There's a big Serbian guy in Denver. I don't know. I give him his food poisoning or something. It's tough because, you know, just as we got done lauding, you know, organizations that know to give their guys time off and stuff. Ultimately, I think Nikola Jokic, beyond great stats and all that, he's going to win it because he's played every game. And he's put them in a position that I think, especially with the injury to Jamal Murray, to be successful and move up in the Western Conference and have a legitimate chance at perhaps deep playoff success. And the other thing working in his favor is he's unequivocally the best player on his team.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chris Paul is hurt by a couple of things. One, yeah, he missed a game, so I'm going to throw that one out there. That's, you know, one game isn't going to make a difference. But the real thing is, you can make an argument that some people say, wait a second, you're not even the best player on your team. How are you the best player in the league? Or at least arguably not the best player on your team. And I think that's going to get in the way of Chris Paul's candidacy. And also because, you know, his stats are, you know, they're all right. But I would say not exactly jump off the page like the way that that Jokic's are.
So where, I mean, if the voting were to come out now, the balloting were to be released right now, where do you think Chris Paul would fall considering all those things?
I think he's definitely on the ballot. He's top five. So I would imagine that the voting is going to go Jokic, Embiid, Paul, and then take your pick from whoever of the wounded warriors or wounded people out there. Like, we're going to get that nod. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough year because so many guys have gotten hurt. It's really opened the playing field. Because there's an argument that if LeBron doesn't get hurt, he's going to be top five, right?
Yeah.
If Kevin Durant doesn't get hurt, the way he was playing, even the way he's played, every time he's played, he's amazing.
Yep.
He'd be in there. If Harden doesn't get hurt, some people thought Harden was MVP. Remember that? Like, up until that hamstring, people were saying, look, I don't care what he did in Houston, this guy's been the best player this year. So what's opened the door for this is that a lot of guys have gotten hurt and missed time, and so now we're kind of comparing resumes of incomplete seasons on one hand versus players who were good but maybe not great. I mean, I've heard people say Julius Randle should be on the MVP ballot, and I can't disagree. He's played great, and he's played a lot of games. You know, as my fellow prognosticator Marcellus Wiley likes to say, the greatest ability is availability.
Yeah.
So I don't care how good you are, LeBron. You just weren't there. So yeah. I got to leave you off.
All right. Last thing, I mean, for me, when you look in the Western Conference, and clearly there's a lot of things that have to break, but when you look at the Western Conference contenders, who do the Suns rank behind? Who do you have your list? What your intuition as to the real Western Conference contenders, and where are the Suns on that list?
All right. I go, if they're healthy, which I know that now is a massive if, is the Lakers are still the best team in the league. They are still far and away the best team in the league, but they're in the danger zone. Now it might be a problem for them. So we'll put an asterisk next to one. I'd say the Clippers are two, even though they're Clippers, and they usually find a way to not be two for long. I would say Utah is three, and then I would put Denver and Phoenix neck and neck for four.
Okay. We'll take that.
I got one more for you. It was a team early in after the All-Star break. Indiana rolled through town, and they beat the Suns on their home floor, and they looked really, really good. And I thought, wow, that record is not very good, but I think Indiana is going to be good in the second half of the season. The opposite has happened. Everybody's hurt. Their coach is going to get run out of town. They got assistants fighting with players on the floor during timeouts. How big of a mess is it in Indiana, and how much do you think they're regretting firing Nate McMillan at this point?
Vince, how good does it feel look at another city and be like, oh, that's a mess over there.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since you could be in Phoenix and talk about, oh, they don't have it together all the way over there. No, it's a huge mess. It is a huge mess, and, full disclosure, I know Coach Bjorken very well. He was the assistant coach to Nick Nurse on our G League affiliate a million years ago in Iowa. I used to go down to Iowa. I worked with both of those guys very closely. We've got a great relationship. So I'm staggered because the reporting, and by the way, it's not just off of that report that came out last couple of days. I've had this been told to me earlier this season, and I literally said, I don't believe it, is that Nate isn't a good manager, is that he's a little bit of a tyrant with not only players, but staff. You can't alienate staff. And so some of those things in there were pretty shocking to me as someone who's worked with them. But at this point, I've heard it from so many different places, and it's so consistent, I can't doubt it. And, you know, they say the toughest 6 inches in sports is moving from that seat over there to that seat over there, from assistant to head coach. There are a lot of guys, a lot of examples of coaches who has assistant coaches everybody loves. they're the great, they're, you know, and it's the person I turn to, I confide in, da, da, da. And then you give them a clipboard and say, you're the head coach, and they turn into monsters.
Yeah.
And then some people just can't handle it, and I guess that's what's happening there. At the same time, there is a level of irony to me that the same players who complained and got Nate McMillan out of Indiana are the ones that are now complaining about Nate Bjorken.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is an element of,
it's the player,
sometimes
not the coach.
There are players you got to listen to, and then sometimes, like, let's be honest. Like, I like Sabonis, I like the Brogdon, those guys, but they're not the type of players to me where they could run a coach out of town.
Yeah,
I mean, like this, we're giving these guys the power.
This, like, isn't like Magic Johnson and Paul Westhead,
right? Exactly. Like, you know, you got Magic Finals MVP, and at 20 years old, yeah. If I'm Jerry Buss, hell yeah, I'm listening to him. I know you're a Hall of Famer,
right.
But like, I'm gonna go with this guy who's gonna be a Hall of Famer. But like, we're talking about guys who are like waiting for injury replacements to be all star. No, just shut up and deal with it. And I thought Nate McMillan got a terrible deal, given how many injuries he had to deal with in Indiana, and he still had them competitive. He wasn't treated right in his ouster, and dare I say, this is what they deserve as a result.
I mean, always great stuff. Not only have you given us a great analogy for why load management makes sense, but in the process, you made me feel better about being the guy who takes the elevator to the second floor every day at work.
I did it this morning. I eschewed the flight of stairs, and you know what? I'm preserving my long-term sustainability.
You're
going to
be fresher
baby.
For the weekend, Vic.
Guys, we don't work on the seventh floor, though. We work on the second floor.
Right, right. Exactly.
I just admitted
load
that.
Management.
Thank you, Amin.
You got to manage it. Thanks, guys.